They should give me $1 for each microphone. I didn't think. Okay. Yeah. Better? F1? Hello? Hello? We're having a lot of obstacles tonight. We're going to discuss the obstacles to meditation. Is that right? Is it really? Okay. And they're spelled like this. Okay. Say Nyepa. Nga. Those of you who can't see, NYEPANGA. Say Nyepa.
Nyepa.
Nga.
Nyepa.
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 Nga. Nyepa means a problem, okay? Nga means five. But I think we discovered some more. We'll start with that. These are, by the way, these are from, what's that book? Uta, okay? Uta is a work by Maitreya. It's one of the five books of Maitreya. It means separating the middle from the extremes. Okay, Uta Namje. The short name is this. It's not on your homework, okay? Especially for the first obstacle and its four antidotes, okay? The source is Uta. The rest of it comes from Bhavanakrama of Kamala Shila and Lamrim Chimo. Okay. To stop the five problems of meditation. By the way, the big thing about the five problems is not so much that you have them, but that you learn to recognize the problems. You see, it's not so much whether you have them or not. Everybody has them. But your job as a meditator, your goal is to get to know them and to be able to recognize them when they're there. Because the great danger in meditation is that you have one of these five problems come in your mind and you don't know what it looks like. And sometimes you even think you're doing great. So to study the five problems of meditation is really cool because you learn to identify them when they come into your mind. So we'll actually try some sitting. We'll try to identify the five tonight later on. I'll wait till you're sleepy and tired and stuff like that, and then we'll go into the five problems, okay? But again, the big trick is to learn to recognize them. It's not so much whether you have them or not. Everybody has them. Most people have them. Okay. To stop the five problems, there are eight famous antidotes. Okay. Those of you who can't see, it's NYENPO and then GYE. Okay. Say Nyembo.
Nyembo.
Ge.
Nyembo.
Ge. Okay. Nyembo means an antidote or a fix or a counter agent or a band-aid or... Okay, gun. All right, ge means eight, and those five problems, there are eight tricks to stopping them in your own mind. Okay, and they're very cool. They're very interesting. Okay, so we're gonna go through the five problems and find out how to fight them during your meditation. Okay, if you're successful in fighting them, your mind goes through nine different levels of meditation ability. And after number nine, you're able to get shamatha. Okay, so these are the nine states of the mind. If you can't see, it's SEMNEGU. Say semne.
Semne.
Gu.
Gu.
Semne.
Semne.
Gu. Semne, sem means mind. Ne means level here or state. And gu means nine. So by having the five problems come up and then applying the eight antidotes for them, you go through nine different meditative levels. And it's nice to know where you are, okay? And you'll be able to tell fairly well where you are. I mean, it's famous for Westerners to misjudge where they are. You know, you have many Westerners come in and say, I think I reached Shamatha, you know, and you say, what's it like? You know, and I say, like, I don't know, I only think about my refrigerator like every 3 or 4 minutes, you know, and, you know, something like that. You know, the first time you learn these, you go home and like 3 days later you decide you reached level nine, you know, and you have to be a little careful. It takes a while. It takes sensitivity to your own mind to know when you have a problem and to be able to recognize it. So it's a very beginning stage just to learn the names of the problems. The real experiential encounter with them takes months and longer, you know, to really recognize what it is when it comes to you. You have to practice all the time, okay? If you don't practice all the time, you won't get there, okay? It's something like playing music, okay? You have to practice every day. It's very much like being a concert pianist. Being a good meditator is very much being like a serious dancer or a serious musician, where you have to be practicing every day, okay? First of the five problems. By the way, we won't get through all five today. I think we're going to try to do three or four. Those of you who can't see, it's L-E-L-O. This is like the only Tibetan word besides yak that sounds like what it is. okay. Say lelo.
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 It means lazy. Okay, like laying low. You know, like all my students remember this word. I don't know why. And all the and they learn. They remember the four-letter words I teach them. But that's, they have more in Tibetan. More letters. Lelo means. It's laziness, but what it means is not feeling like meditating. It's like you don't feel like meditating. Right? And I think as you get more experienced in Dharma, as you've been a Dharma student more years, you begin to realize that this is the worst one of all. You know, it's not a question of do you have subtle dullness or gross dullness or agitation, or are you on seventh level or eighth level? The whole point is, did you meditate today at all? You know, did you, and do you feel like meditating? You see, I mean, and I speak from 25 years of trying to do it, and I still have days when I just don't feel like it, you know, and so the first obstacle to meditation is that you don't feel like doing it. And this is insurmountable practically. I mean, if you don't get past this one, then you don't have to worry about the rest of this class, you know. And I'm not kidding. And it's terrible. It's really bad. And we don't grow up in a culture where everyone goes and meditates in the morning. And you know, you're swimming against the tide, as in so many parts of Buddhism. You know, you're swimming upstream in the Mississippi River called American civilization. You know, and it's hard. It's really hard. No one's going to understand it if you show up late at work and tell them you were meditating, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. The whole culture, there isn't a time when you're supposed to meditate. There's TV time at night, there's dinner time before that, there's commuting time before that, there's work time before that, there's lunch before that, there's early morning work before that, there's coffee break, there's getting your clothes on, there's eating, and there's waking up. And nowhere in there, in American life, is there a time for meditating, you know? So you have to be a tough guy. And there are four methods to getting your mind to change about this. It's very, very, very difficult. It's the worst one by far. If anyone in this room meditated every day for half an hour, your worries would be over. You'd be a really good meditator. It's the lelo. You know, it's not feeling like meditating, and it's breaking the pattern of meditating. It's like the 2 or 3 days a week that you miss. that disqualify you from the benefits of meditation. You will never, it doesn't do any good to meditate once or twice a week. It won't do anything for you. You might as well just, you know, do aerobics or something. Okay? So, you know, it won't help you. If you don't do it every day, and, you know, if you've tried in your life to become a good meditator, you've noticed that. You know, you have to do it every day. If you don't do it every day, it doesn't help much. Especially frustrating to try to do it two or three times a week. You know, it's like trying to play piano half an hour, two or three times a week, and then trying to play it well. You might as well give it up. You know, it won't work. Okay, so at least every day you have to do it. Now, how do you trick yourself into doing it? I mean, for Americans, it's tricking yourself into doing it. Okay, and here are four methods that are presented in Scripture. These are the ones that especially come from the Utta. Okay. So I'll put the antidotes like A, B, C, D, all right? Say Depa.
Depa.
D-E-P-A, okay? Those of you who know some Tibetan, this word normally means faith, and I don't want you to write faith, okay? That's the normal meaning of this word. In the study of meditation, it doesn't mean that anymore. It means to understand the good qualities of meditation, to understand the benefits of meditation, okay? That's depa. So it's more like being attracted to meditation, understanding what it can do for you. And at this point, a lot of this has come from the first Panchen Lama's Lamrim, and he makes a whole big list, and I copied it out. I thought you might like to see it. The first thing he says is, If you meditate a lot, if you meditate on a regular basis, physically you will be very healthy. Okay, it does something for your channels, it does something for your body, and physically you will be a much healthier person. Okay, so, you know, he starts with the what we would call worldly benefits. You know, I mean, the goal of Buddhism is not to be healthy in this life. It's not like that. But if you meditate well, and if you meditate on a regular basis, your body will get healthier and healthier. It's just an effect of that position, the Virachana position on your body. So you will get healthier, and your body will start to feel lighter. Okay, as you get older, your body starts to feel lighter. Okay, you're able to walk in ways that you weren't able to walk. You're able to move in ways that you weren't able to move. Your body becomes very supple. And very light, much lighter every year. Okay, if you don't meditate, it kind of goes the opposite way. Okay, as you may have noticed. Okay, but if you meditate regularly, it really does get lighter and lighter every year. Your body feels better and better. And I'm not talking yoga exercises or standing on your head or jogging or anything like that. Just honest. Hour of meditation every day, and your body starts to feel much different, and you just feel like all the time you feel like you have a lot of energy. You know, you have a lot of energy, and you get sick very rarely. Okay, very rarely. When you get sick, you'll notice it because it's so strange. You know, like, what's going on here? You know what I mean? So your body just feels like you could dance all the time or something like that, and even if you never had any interest in dancing your whole life, you know, you get to a point where you just feel like, you know, you'd like to dance or something like that. And that's a result of meditation. It's very, very sweet. It's very real. And it's nothing to do with vitamins and eating right and blah, blah, blah. It's just the meditation does it for you. It's very cool. Second result, by the way, that's called Xinjiang. Okay, Xinjiang means in your body you just feel like cotton or feather, and when you walk, you walk with a bounce in your step, and you can move your body in ways that you never imagined before. Okay, even if you're not interested in that, okay, which I'm not particularly interested in, but it happens to you. Okay, now there's a Xinjiang of mind is the second one. Xinjiang of mind means you become very, very happy. Okay, like it's not a goal of meditation, and I'm afraid most Americans mistake the goal of meditation. But there's a side effect of good meditation that your mind is constantly has a lot of creative energy. You're much, much better able to create. You know, you have ideas at work that nobody else had. And and you see things that nobody at work sees. And you know, frankly, you can make a lot of money at that. You know what I mean? It's not your, it's not a goal of Buddhism, but you don't have to deny it. You know what I mean? If it comes to you, you can use the money for good projects and things like, you know, support monks and things like that. Not this monk, but I mean, you know, other monks. And, you know, in India and things like that. I mean, it is an effect of it, that your mind is just open, creative, and much, much happier. Your mind is constantly, and I don't mean you're giggling all the time like His Holiness or anything like that, but it's just a deep kind of happiness all the time. And it's not the kind of happiness you get from ice cream, you know, it's a different kind. It's just a very basic, stable happiness that stays with you all the time. And you know, you have bad things happen to you, you get upset, and things like that still happen. But the foundation of your mental health is very good. And you know, something bad can happen and it throws you off for an hour or two, but then quickly your mind comes back. And this is a benefit of meditation. So you're constantly happy at a certain level. You feel some kind of joy all day. You know, you're always joyful. And the people around you get that way, it spreads around you, and you're moving through this big bubble throughout the day of people you know and people you've been around, and they start acting, if they're meditating also, they start acting like that, and it's quite pleasant to be around those people. It's quite pleasant to be around people who are meditating well, and it's pleasant to be around you if you're meditating well, and your mind just has this basic happiness that doesn't really ever go away. You know, in a real bad traffic jam, it gets a little irritated, and then it just bounces right back. And this is a mental quality of called Xinjiang of mind. Okay, the first one was called the Xinjiang of body. So it expresses itself, it manifests itself in a deeper level of happiness, some kind of contentment throughout the day. No matter what you get, you're contented. You know, the stock market drops 1,000 points. You had all this money in the stock market, and you're a little bit upset for like 20 minutes or something, and then it just comes back. And this is the beauty of a meditative state of mind. A person who stays in meditation a lot, they have this state of mind, okay? And a Buddhist, and then you're much, much more creative and problem solving. Like there are lamas I know. This is not a story. I mean, this is for real. I think it was Lati Rinpoche. We were driving along. Car brakes in India, which is so rare, and and he says, lift up the hood, you know, he lift up the hood, and he says, explain to me what this thing does. And he says, oh, it's a battery, it supplies energy. Oh yeah, okay, explain to me what this does. He says, oh, those are the cylinder block, you know, and they do that. And then he, after about 3 minutes, he's like, you have to fix this right here. And he was right, you know what I mean? And if you meditate a lot, then you just see things, you know what I mean? You see solutions where other people are seeing problems. You see, like, it's called Pung Sumba. Say Pung Sumba. Pung Sumba. If you're not in a meditative state of mind a lot, then problems present themselves. Like, should I do this or should I do this? You see what I mean? Should I support this person or should I support this person? You see, what do you call it? Dichotomies all the time, or you see opposing forces all the time, you know. And a person who meditates all the time has a totally different viewpoint on it or something. And they see everything totally different. And Pung Sumba means an unexpected third solution. They always come up with an unexpected third thing. You know, my boss, when he was teaching me to buy diamonds, he said, I'll teach you what's called the two bad choices trick. You know, the guy comes with a parcel of like 1,000 diamonds. They hold them in little papers like that. And you look at them and you see they're worth like say they're worth $40,000 or something. So you tell the guy, would you rather I paid you $30,000 or would you rather have 120 days terms? I don't have to pay you for 4 months, you see? And you get his mind on dichotomy. Now he's got, either he has to take $10,000 less or he has to wait 4 months for his check, you know? And you get his mind, you know, struggling with these two choices. And he's not struggling with the idea that maybe he shouldn't sell it to you at all. You see what I mean? You know what I mean? And you know, if you're not meditating a lot, you see the world like that. And when you meditate a lot, you're constantly coming up with different ideas of different ways of solving a problem that nobody else is thinking of. And whether you're a businessman or whether you're trying to run three kids or something, everything comes to you different. You know, all the solutions to things come to you different, and you solve them like nothing, like a piece of cake. They call Togmen means piece of cake, hot knife through butter. You know, all these places where people see problems, you see opportunities, and you really do. And that's a benefit of meditation. Okay, Shinjang. He mentions one-pointedness, meaning no matter what kind of business you're in, or what your career is, or whether you're trying to run a family or a garden, or it doesn't matter, but you have the ability to concentrate one-pointed on it. You have an intense ability to concentrate, you know, and you can focus your mind on something that you're doing, and you have this ability to just stay there intensely, you know what I mean? And you just sink into it, and you stay there, and you can focus on any kind of a problem or any kind of a something you want to work on, like a project that you want to work on. People who meditate a lot are much more likely to succeed in their everyday affairs because they know how to focus on something. You see what I mean? They're able to weed out other objects and focus on this one task that they have, and they're normally much more successful. You know, there's a karma of people who concentrate on too many things and don't succeed at anything. They never finish anything. And if you start meditating a lot, you gain this ability to concentrate on one task and see it to its conclusion. Even if it's like a 10-year job or something, 10-year project or something, you have this ability to see into the future and focus on it much more strongly. So if you like a person who's frustrated because you can't bring things to fulfillment or to completion, if you meditate, then you're able to do it. It gives you this ability. Next thing he says is that ability is useful in monitoring your mind. Okay? And that's a Buddhist, especially if you're trying to keep a book or something. One of the goals in your life is to be able to monitor your own mental condition. Like my lama has diabetes, and we used to have to go to the doctor so they could take a blood sugar sample. And now they have these new machines, and he can do it himself. It's complicated, you know. He has to prick his arm a certain way. He has to smear it on this thing. It has to go onto this within 10 seconds. He has to push a certain button. Then he has to drop a certain drop on it. But he can do it at home now. And this is like, now he can do it every night. And he's never had a problem with it. And that's the difference between a meditator and someone who's not meditating. See, if you're meditating and you have concentration, you can check in on your own mind every hour or every half hour. You have this ability to be watching your own mind all the time. So your karma changes. You see? You're aware of it if you're saying something bad to somebody. You're aware of it if you're hurting someone's feelings. You know? You're aware of it if you're starting to get cranky. You know? Because you're tuned into your mind. And what happens is you start collecting much less bad karma. You have a bad karma detection unit in your mind. You have these carbon monoxide things that go off when there's too much in the room, you know. And a person who's meditating a lot, and we're going to talk about that ability today, the ability to catch your own mind when it's getting crazy, when your mind is starting to get unhappy or cranky or jealous or angry. And so a person who's meditating a lot is very, very sensitive to their own mind, and they can detect when their mind is acting up, and then they can do something about it. If you don't have this ability, you get into a samsaric downward cycle. You get angry, say something, meet another bad person, get angry, say something, meet another bad person. And this is this downward cycle that you get if you can't monitor your own mind. It's like having your own diabetes testing kit, okay? And it's really, really good. And he says that's a benefit. We're going to do it tonight. It's called Shishin. Okay? Shishin. I think in Chinese, Shishin is thank you or something. Yeah. Thank you for Shishin. Yeah. Okay, next one is that your virtues become more powerful. Like if you decide, that was sort of a negative one, right? Now if you decide to do some virtuous thing, like I'm going to do something for Lama Sopa, you know, I want to make Lama Sopa an offering or something. And, you know, you decide what you're going to offer to him, and then you can focus on it, and you can get into it deeply. And then you take on this joy with your good deeds. So your bad deeds become less, and your good deeds, your good karma becomes much, much more powerful, much, much more focused. And if you do a good deed with a meditative state of mind, the good karma is extremely powerful. And you're able to focus and take joy in it and get concentrated on it. And so even the good deeds that you do automatically, like taking care of your children or something, if you're meditating a lot, then those become very powerful actions. And if you're not meditating, they just become sort of wimpy good deeds. Okay, so there's a big difference if you have a meditative state of mind. Okay. The fifth benefit that he talks about, I don't know how many you have now, but this is... you get Ngunshe and Zutu. Say Ngunshe. Zutu. Ngunshe. Zutu. Ngunshe means clairvoyance. Okay, ESP. Ability to read other people's minds. Stuff like that. If you have it, you're not supposed to say so in Buddhism. You know what I mean? I guess it's more fun to know what people are thinking. They don't know that you know, right? You're not supposed to brag about it, and it's not considered important in Buddhism. It won't save your life. It won't keep you out of dying. It's a good byproduct. It's supposed to be useful for a teacher, because then you can look into your student's mind and say, you know what they need, you know what they need, you know, are thinking. But it's not like important to use for winning lottery or anything like that, okay? And I don't have it, and I'm not claiming to have it, but I can say that if you meditate a lot, I think you would find that you would have instincts. Things would come to you like instincts. Like, I wouldn't say like, if you meditate a real lot, you can read other people's thoughts directly. But I'd say even before then, you start to have instincts, like maybe we shouldn't turn here at this moment, or maybe we should get something ready. I think somebody might be coming today, or, you know, they start to, if you're at work, for example, they start to ask you, is this a good day to start this project? You know, I mean, you can start to get little, it's not like you can read the whole day or something like that, but you start to get instincts about what's going to happen, or what someone's going to say, or how someone might react to something. And this is Ngunshe starting in a small way. And it's very pleasant and very useful. If you use it with a good heart, it can be very important. You know, you can make things happen that wouldn't happen because you know what's going to happen. But then not saying in a direct way, but I'm saying you have better instincts for what to do, and then things happen like that. Like you're like, maybe we should check the stove right now. It might be leaking, you know, and you go out and it is leaking. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. Little things start happening all day long like that, where you have insights into what might happen in 2 or 3 hours or something. And then your whole day becomes much smoother and much more successful. You become a person who can do many different projects or many different activities at once, and they will work out because you're not just running blind. You know, part of it is some kind of insight into what's going to happen, something like that. Zutra means ability to perform miracles. And if you get to an advanced state of meditation, you can adjust the physical properties of material objects. In other words, if an object is soft, you can make it hard. And you can change the basic properties of an object. So on a low level, you could like... for example, you might not get cold very easily. You see what I mean? You can change the properties of the air around you and things like that. And you wouldn't get cold very easily. On a little bit more advanced level, you could walk on water, something like, seriously, you know, you could actually make the water hard where you're stepping. You see what I mean? With your concentration. And this is a special thing. It's presented, it's called the Saikam Meyakam, the Sachum Melungi Kam. It's a special in the scriptures. At a very advanced level, you could turn objects into gold or something like that. You know, you could change the actual elements of an object. Okay, and these are not considered spiritual goals. These are just side effects of a good meditator. You are using your meditation for real goals, like not dying and seeing emptiness directly. But by the way, you gain these other abilities. Okay. Excuse me?
Does it have a half-life? Is it temporary or
If you keep meditating, it stays. Oh, you mean the gold?
Yeah.
No, pure gold. Yeah. Nagarjuna, if you know, I mean, I used to complain because at the monastery they asked me to do the accounts for like 15 years and of one of our sections. And I used to complain to my teacher. He said, no, you should be complimented because the karma of making a mistake with Dharma money or embezzling Dharma money is so serious that they only entrust it to very honest people. So you should feel glad. And he said, you know who was the accountant at Nalanda Monastery? And I said, no. And he said, Nagarjuna was the only person that was trusted with that karma. Because it was so heavy karma, if you mistake by $1 or $5, it's very heavy karma. It's very, very heavy karma to misuse Dharma funds. But good old Nagarjuna was thrown out of Nalanda for doing alchemy in order to help the Sangha. He was trying to raise funds, fundraising. but he was actually, I guess it's against some monk's bow or something. Anyway, that's why I don't do it. All right, the final benefit, aside from getting rich, is of course that, is what I mentioned the first night. I don't know if you were there Friday night, but there is a stage in meditation where, which is shamatha, right? Samdhan dhamma nirdho micho me, a certain tiny sliver of the meditative spectrum that if you can put your mind there, and if you can learn to stay there, then you can see emptiness directly. Very subtle, very difficult, but with training, anyone can do it. Okay, it's not easy, but if someone trains you properly, you can do it. And about emptiness, there are more false teachings and bad information and wrong information because it's difficult to understand. And people struggle and they explain it wrong. And if you get a wrong explanation, you will never understand it and you'll never see it. And there are many, many mistaken explanations by good-hearted people. You know, I read books all the time by good-hearted people writing in English, and they are nice people, and they're explaining it completely wrong. I mean, in a way that no scripture ever said, in a way that no commentary ever stated, you know, in a way that no one has ever experienced, you know what I mean? And will never experience, you know. There are many, many mistaken and conflicting explanations of emptiness. But if you are trained properly and accurately, and then if you meditate, you will see emptiness directly. So what's the big deal about that? Is it like, you know, I saw this purple light for 15 minutes. I feel so good, you know, something like that. Is that the point? No, there's something very, very profound about emptiness. If you can see emptiness directly once for 20 minutes, on that same day after you come out, you will, all people who ever see it, see their future lives directly. Okay, they see all of what will happen to them in the future directly. Okay, and they see the day of their enlightenment directly. They are directly perceive their own enlightenment. Okay, and you can read other people's minds on that day directly. You come into contact with the Dharmakaya of the Buddha. You meet a Buddha directly. Okay, and you know it. Okay, and these are what happened to you. And then I, you know, that's what we talked about Friday night. Imagine what it would feel like to know that you wouldn't have to live like this anymore. You know, I was just at the side of this person who just got taken to the hospital. You know, and I'm looking at them and thinking, just now, that's why I was late, right? And I'm looking at them thinking, you know, now this person can't meditate, now this person can't do anything. You know, they're taking them to the hospital, and it's over for this person, for the time being, you know what I mean? And then I start, it just dawns on me, you know, like, maybe I'll be there, you know? And then I think, yes, stupid, you will be, you know? Imagine what it would be like to know that you didn't have to go through that ever again, you see? Never, never again, that you're just totally beyond all that, and to know it directly, and to see the day when you yourself will become, I'm not saying you'll become a high lama, I'm not saying you'll become a good teacher, I'm not saying you'll learn Tibetan or something like that, I'm saying you see your own enlightenment directly. You become as powerful, as omniscient, as omnipresent as Shakyamuni Buddha, and you see it directly. And your perception of emptiness at that moment is nothing less than how a Buddha sees emptiness. You see what I mean? You are seeing emptiness. You're not a Buddha yet, but no one perceives it any more directly than you did. Okay, an Arya who perceives emptiness directly and an enlightened being who sees emptiness directly see the same thing, and they see it to the same percentage, which is 100%. There's no difference in the in what they see and how they see it. Okay, a Buddha also sees all other objects in the universe, but as far as their direct perception of emptiness, you will be, on that day you become two of the three jewels. You know, you become what all Buddhists wake up and pray to every day. Okay, and this is this can happen to any person in this room, but it's impossible if you don't learn to meditate. It must occur from a certain level of meditation. And if you, and that's the whole reason to meditate, okay, is to reach that day. The rest of the stuff I listed was try to trick you into meditating, you know. Look, you know, you're like that, you know. You know, and you will. It really, you will feel like that. You really will feel like that. But it's not the point. I mean, the point is that you don't have to die, okay? And you will be enlightened, and then you can help other people. It's very, very profound. And anyone can do it with proper training. You must get... We got this chart from Tijan Rinpoche. We're translating it for you. Gail's going to try to Xerox it. It's got this mold on the paper. It's like half blotted out. We have like five people working with whiteout all night. It's this old chart. It's beautiful. Rice paper thing, and it starts with the first day that you try to meditate, and then there's this beautiful picture of an elephant and a rabbit, and it goes up this road, and it's a summary of the five problems, the eight solutions, and the nine states. And at the very, very top is shamatha, and right beyond that is go and find out what emptiness is about. Like after shamatha, you know, it's like they consider that even more important. You know, at the very end of this long and winding road. I'll give you the chart, okay? And then we'll have to do a nice one sometime. This one's kind of messed up. We found it in this temple. It was all like had dirt all over it and mold, you know. And right at the very top it says, "Go try to figure out emptiness." You see? And so you have to do that. That's up there at the top, okay? You have to be able to do that also. Right? Oh, that's that. Cool. Well, they're doing pretty well. So we're going to make you one with the English down here. And then you can take it home. And these are the... This is a summary of all the problems. It's still got some mold on it. Okay. Like this is... the monkey is your mind wandering. And the elephant is... Oh, the elephant is your mind, and the black color is dullness, chinghua, okay? And then it goes up. You start here with Shishin is this hook that elephant tamers use. The guy asked me the name for the thing, okay? It's right here. It's in his right hand, and it says use your Shishin, you know, which is your ability to watch your own mind. And then you go up, and each of these... there are six, one, two, three, four, five. This is level number nine, level number eight, level number seven, and it goes like that. And he's chasing the elephant, which is his own mind, to try to control it. And then way up here is, you know, you have to go try to understand emptiness. And here is, you've already got shamatha. He's sitting on the elephant, okay? And then this is an explanation of the chart. And then at the end, there's this very beautiful thing that says, my name is Trichan Rinpoche, who is our lama's root lama. And I made this chart because nobody could understand the old ones because they were misprinted for so long. He fixed up all the captions. Okay. So we'll try to get everybody one of those. Thank you. I didn't know it was ready. Okay. So the first fix for not feeling like meditating is to imagine what it would be like. And as the older you get, the more serious the thing becomes, okay? The older you get, the more what I said. And you can have all of those things. Everything from feeling light to being happy, and your whole life goes like incredible. You know, your whole life changes, you know. Suddenly in your business, you're able to see solutions. The business is like goes from zero to $100 million or something. You know what I mean? And in anything you want to do, you can do it. You know, any project you want to pull off, you can pull it off. Because everything is clear. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's just a wonderful feeling. You feel great. Physically you feel great. Mentally you feel great. And then whatever you want to do, you succeed at. Because you have this ability of meditation. And then finally, if you keep going, you see emptiness directly. And then imagine what it would feel like to know what was going to happen to you in your whole life. And to know that you don't have to die like normal people have to die. And to see your own enlightenment. And that's the whole goal of meditation. And you can do it. But if you don't meditate every day, it won't happen. Okay. So depa means to understand what I just spent 20 minutes talking about. Okay. Depa means, yeah, I understand that could happen. You know, I understand the benefits of meditation now. You know, I grew up in America, TM, 15 minutes a day. I'm not putting it down. I don't know what they do exactly, but the odds, what you can get out of meditation is the most profound thing in your life. You know what I mean? What you can get out of meditation is to move into realms that you never even dreamed of. And more than you ever dreamed of. You know, you can't imagine what will happen to you if you keep meditating. You can't think about it now. If I try to describe it, you wouldn't be able to think about it. And you wouldn't understand what I was saying. But you can go to places that you never ever imagined. So when people come to me and say, I said, did you meditate today? And they said, no, I didn't feel like it. It's like you're crazy. You know, it's like, I don't understand it. You know, I just, it's not like you have to go tell the priest in the church that you didn't meditate today. It's not like you have to confess it or something like that. You'll never see those things. You'll never go there. You know, you will live in the garbage can your whole life and never know that there was this rainbow and, you know, this beautiful ocean and, you know what I mean? And you'll die like that. It's kind of pitiful to see somebody like that. You know, you will really believe, like the rest of America, that these other realms don't exist because you couldn't see them. And you'll swear that those places don't exist because you've never been there because you didn't meditate. You know? And those realms are going on around you all the time. They're right around you all the time, and you can't see them until you meditate. Okay? And it's just a trip to go to some... You know, I grew up... Went to church all the time. They told me all these wonderful things about heaven and God and all that stuff. And then at about age 10, you give up. And you say, those things don't really exist. You know, and you meet a few skeptical friends and they help you give it up. And, you know, and you truly believe that there's no such thing like that. You really believe that after a certain age in this country, you believe that. But now I say those things are possible and you can go there. And they're beautiful and they're incredible and they're wonderful and they exist all around you and you can't get there unless you meditate. You know, you can't move into those places unless you meditate. And they're all around you and everything they said when you were a kid at church was true. And there are places like that. And there are realms like that. And you can go there. And all those Christian mystics, something really was happening to them. And those places are really there, but you have to meditate. And any normal person can have a normal job and a normal family, just given an hour a day. You know, the rest is not. You don't have to, you know, go to France and find a convent or something. Or it's not like that. You can do it wherever you are, but you have to give it a good hour a day, and then you'll find out those things. You start to get the Ronyamba Minsa. You start to get the taste of it after a while, and then you get excited. Okay. Okay. Second one. We'll take a break after these four. It's D-U-N-P-A. D-U-N as in Nancy, P-A. Say Dumba.
Dumba.
Dumba. Dumba. Dumba means, yeah, I want that. Okay. Dumba means, I want that. Okay. I mean, at the very most attentive moment of my last spiel, if it occurred to you, yeah, I want that, you know, then I succeeded, you know. You go from, Dumba is built on Dumba, Depa, okay? Dhyanpa means someone finally gives you a clear explanation of why you should meditate. You know, you can save your life. You can go to other realms. You can read people's minds. You can fly. You can turn stuff into gold. You can see emptiness directly. You can become a Buddha. It's not just something you do for an hour a day and just sit there and wait for something to happen with some dim, you know, dull hope that something's going to happen and you quit after 6 months because nothing happens. You know what I mean? It's not like that. So Dhyanpa means to understand what could happen to you if you got good at it. And then Dumba builds on that. And Dumba means, yeah, I'd like to get that. You know what I mean? I'd really like to get that thing. Okay? It's like some kind of inspiration that says, yeah, you know, I tried meditating in the past. Now I'm going to get serious about it. Okay? The English is T-S-U-N-P-A. Say Tsumba.
Tsumba.
Tsumba means the willingness to work hard to get it. Okay? Tsumba means the willingness to work a little bit hard in your meditation. And again, it builds on the first two, right? Dhyanpa means, oh, finally someone explained to me what meditation can do for you. Okay? And I have a feeling you really can reach those things. And then Dumba is like, yeah, I'd really like to do that. You know, that sounds good to me. And then Tsumba means, you know, what is that? Ravi Shankar. People said, you play beautifully. He says, yeah, it's 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. You know? And he said, "If I used to play sitar in India, and they sit you down for 3-4 hours, and you say, could I play like Ravi Shankar? They said, yeah, can you do this scale? You can do Rag Lalit, you know. They'll say, you do the Rag Lalit scale for 3 hours, and they leave you in this room, you know, and they go home, you know. Hopefully they come back, you know. And you just do scales all day, you know. And they say, you want to play like Ravi Shankar? Here, do these scales. And all day long you're going, Saregama Paranisa Sanirigapani. You know, you go up and down, up and down. And it drives you crazy. But that's Tsumba. Tsumba means sweat, you know. You got to put in the time. And you get good at it. But it's like athletics or music or anything else. You have to sit there and sweat. And you have to try, every single day you have to work on it. Whether you feel well or not, whether you feel like it or not, whether your back hurts or not, you know, whether it's cold or not, whether you have time or not, whether you have other demands on your time or not, this comes first. And you do your meditation. And you just put in the hours that it takes. And that's just raw hours, okay? On your seat. I think it was, who was it, Milarepa? Was it Milarepa? Marpa that showed him the thing? I don't remember. Anyway. Milarepa? Milarepa? Yeah, so, yeah, Milarepa's leaving Gampopa or something. I don't know. Anyway, some guy, I won't show you, but his student said, what was it that made you such a great yogi? And he turned around and he pulled his robes up and he had these big calluses on his butt. And he said, you know, sitting on my meditation seat, you know, just hours. And like that, okay? You won't get the desire to spend hours if you don't get like turned on about meditation, which is Dumba. And you won't get turned on if you don't stop and think once in a while about all the amazing places you can get to. And frankly, if you're under 25 or something, go for it. You know, you really have the energy. I mean, and if it's rare for a person under 25 to want to sit and meditate for long periods of time, but that's when you're really physically at your peak. And if you can start then, I'm not saying, you know, the others of us can't do it. Not most of us, but I particularly say that if you're young, go for it, because you have the energy and you have the strength. And if you really put the hours in now, when you get my age, you'll be very grateful to your lamas, and you'll be very, very happy, you know, that you saw all these things and you've been to all those places. So you have time usually when you're younger, you have less commitments, and you have the physical energy that it takes. So you can go for it. Really go for it. Last one. The English is S-H-I-N J-A-N-G, Xinjiang. Okay, Xinjiang. Say Xinjiang.
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 This is the last antidote to
lay low.
Lay low. What are you going to do? I'm going to lay low, okay? No, you're not going to lay low. This is the last antidote, and they all build on each other. So the first one was what? Yeah, Deva, which means, yeah, I understand what this thing can do for me. And then Dumba, which is what? Like you get turned on by it. Third one? Tumba, you put in the hours. Okay, you put in the hours. And then fourth, Xinjiang means that thing I spoke about, your body and mind, your body gets... Xinjiang means your body starts to feel like you weigh about 50 pounds less. Seriously, you know? Your body starts to feel very light. And when you walk, you're just like, you feel like you can fly, you know. Your whole energy level, your whole vitality level is very good. And when you sit down to meditate, it feels fantastic, you know. And you're just, your whole body is like turned on all the time. And mental Xinjiang is this deep state of happiness. And when you're meditating, it's not this buzzed out, stupid kind of pleasure that you get from too much chocolate cake or something, okay? It's not like that. It's this really intense, focused, happy thing that you get from a real good book. They say there's some kind of thing released into your mind when you're having a good time. I don't know what it is. Anyway, you can get it from meditation, you know? Like, if you sit there and it's whatever you get from a really good movie or from really inspiring music, or watching Gandhi motion picture, you know what I mean? Something very, very inspiring, something that really turns you on, and then you feel this sort of release in your mind of some kind of drug or something, and it's a good drug. I mean, you feel very focused, and you feel very intent. It's like when you're having a really good time or reading a really good book or watching a really good movie or listening to some very inspiring music, and then something is coming into your mind. And if you meditate enough, if you put in number three, Tsumba, if you put in the hours, then you reach number four, which is this physical feeling and this mental feeling. And then it's very hard to get lelo, okay? It gets very hard not to want to meditate. You see what I mean? Then you're like, all day long, you're dreaming about your meditation cushion. You know, like, I can't wait to get back to her, you know? You know, my meditation cushion. It's like you have this relationship with your meditation cushion. And you're like always excited when you see it, and you're thinking about it all day, you know. You know, you're like thinking, when can I get back to my meditation cushion, you know? It's like having some new toy or something, you know. It's like, or having a new relationship or something, and you're like all excited about this person, and you're actually thinking about, oh, gee, I wonder if I can get up like 15 minutes earlier and have a little more time with it, you know. It's the total opposite of lelo. You see what I mean? Lelo is like, you know, maybe I could skip meditation today. And Xinjiang is like, this feels so good. I wonder if I could squeeze in another one before I go to bed, you know? And it's like you want to keep doing it. Like you get very, very turned on about it, and it feels great. And you miss your meditation cushion, and you want to get back to your meditation cushion, and you skip even a few meals or something. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. Okay? Like that. Okay, take a break, and we'll try to finish pretty soon. For those of you who can't see, it's D-A-M, D-A-M, N-G-A-K, I'm not plugged in, I feel to be plugged in, am I missing one? Turn it on, okay, I think it's okay, okay, better? Better? Okay. D-A-M N-G-A-K J-E-P-A. Okay. Say Dhamma Jepa. Dhamma Jepa. By the way, we're going to go really late tonight. Not as bad as Lama Sipo, okay? And just enjoy it, okay? Just relax. Figure you're not going to get home on time. We have to do a puja after this. You people just relax. We'll do it really slow. And then we'll all sleep in tomorrow, okay? Okay, deal? So don't even worry about it. Don't think about it. We'll do a nice, slow, beautiful puja. We'll end in the middle of the morning. And not that late, maybe midnight or something. And then we all get to sleep in tomorrow. Okay. This is the Dhamma in Kadampa, meaning advice, okay? Kadampa means, by the way, where everything you ever read seems to be like personal advice to your practice. This is this thing where you go into a teaching and the Lama seems to be criticizing you directly. And Kadampa means something like that. No matter what they say, it seems like they're talking straight to you. The Dham means advice. Dhamgat means advices. In this case, how to meditate, right? Jepa means to forget. Okay. Now I have to tell you that it doesn't mean that, okay? And never forget it, okay? It does not mean forget the advices. It means to lose the object, you see? And so many parts of the meditation instructions are like that, and you have to be linked into the oral tradition, and you have to know that they're code words for something else. So, and if you don't know, you translate it wrong, and then people are struggling, because people struggle because it's wrong. And they try to do what it says, and it's wrong. And they can't do what it says, and they keep trying, and it doesn't work, you know. So, Dhamgat Jepa, forgetting the advices, means to lose the object of meditation. You're trying to keep an image of Lama Sopa in front of you, and then suddenly you're thinking about, you know, what do you have to do this afternoon with this guy at work? You see what I mean? And that's Dhamgat Jepa. It means to lose the object of your meditation completely. Okay? It's like a very gross meditation mistake. And it happens a lot at the beginning levels. Okay? Where you're just completely onto another subject. And you lost the original object of your meditation. Whether it was an image, or whether it was part of an outline that you're meditating on, or whether it was part of a philosophical problem that you were meditating on. Those are three different kinds of meditation. But to get totally off that onto another subject, you know, 2 minutes go by, you're meditating on what this person said to you yesterday, and that's called Dhamgat Jepa. It has nothing to do with forgetting how to meditate or forgetting the instructions or anything like that. You have to know that, okay? Of course, it's the second meditation problem, okay? The fix for that... I'll put fix for two, okay? It's D-R-E-N as in Nancy, P-A. Say Temba.
Temba.
Temba. Temba means to bring your mind back to the object, okay? Literally, it means to remember something, and it doesn't mean that in the study of meditation. Again, it's one of those code words, so it's not... People have translated it as recollection or remembering or something. It's not that. Recollection means, where did I leave my keys? Oh, now I recollect where I left them. You know what I mean? That's not what Temba means here. And that it's just a lazy translation, and they haven't studied the great books, and they haven't seen what it really... It means, of course, to bring your mind back to the original object after you lost it. Okay? That's Temba. Okay? So the grossest, you know, boo-boo number two. What was boo-boo number one? Don't say laziness, okay?
Hello.
Don't feel like meditating, okay? Yes. I mean, it's a kind of laziness, but more especially, it's what you know you've had all these years. You just don't feel like it. Okay, that's lelo. And then the second one problem is that you just lose the object. And then the fix for number two is you bring it back. You bring the mind back to the object. Temba also means to pull, or, you know, like a donkey or something, all right? You pull him back to his object. Come on, we gotta come back here. We were looking at Lama Sopa, and you're thinking about what that lady said to you yesterday. You know, okay? That's Temba. Temba means pull the mind back to where it was. Okay. The English letters here are J I N G and then G U. Okay. Say Chingu. Chingu. Qing means dullness, we talked about it. Ge means agitation. Okay? Qing ge. We're going to talk, we're going to spend the rest of the week talking about Chingma mostly. I mean, what Chingma is, how to recognize it, what it feels like. But basically, you know, if you've ever tried to meditate on a full stomach, if you've ever tried to meditate without enough sleep, if you've ever tried to meditate in a warm room, all of those, you know what Chingma is. Chingma is where your mind just starts to get really sleepy. Okay, drowsiness, sleepy, slow, okay, dull. And it feels like you ate too much, you know what I mean? It feels like that feeling, like you ate too many cookies or something, and it's just this 5 minutes later you feel blah. You can say blah, okay? That's Chingma, all right? There's a gross form of Chingma and a subtle form of Chingma, and we'll talk about it. It's a whole art form to catch the subtle form of Chingma, okay? Gupa, it's called agitation. You know, when I read that in the English books when I was, 20, it was like, agitation. I only get agitated when my little brothers, bothering me, It's like, that's not what agitation means here. It means that the mind goes to a different object, okay? It means to catch the mind moving around to different objects. And it's very frustrating when you're trying to meditate and your mind is like moving from one thing to another, okay? Your mind is like thinking about all the problems of your day and it just keeps moving around. That's gupa, okay? There are three kinds of gupa. You know, one is very interesting, to think of another virtuous object. You're supposed to be focusing on Lama Sopa and you start getting distracted by Tara, okay? And your mind keeps going over to Tara, okay? That's gupa, okay? And that's a mistake of meditation. So Jetsun Kapa says, first of all, be aware that if your mind moves to any other object at all, even if it's a good object, that's a mistake. See what I mean? And that you have to be careful for, because you don't feel so bad, So Tara's not so bad, But in meditation, this is considered a very bad mistake, okay? To go from one good thing to another good thing is considered a big mistake, okay? To think about a desire object, okay? The other common mistake of gupa, the other common form of gupa, is to start thinking about something you like, especially sense objects, like you start thinking about food, you start thinking about girls or boys, you start thinking about music starts coming into your mind, stuff like that, okay? These are common things that pull your mind away, gupa. So the first kind of gupa is kind of like a noble gupa, where you start thinking about Tara instead of Lama Sopa. The second kind of gupa is not so noble, and you're thinking about what's for lunch, or you're thinking about that girl you saw in the store, or something like that. And that's the second kind of gupa. Third kind of gupa is not as common and much more destructive. And that's to have any negative thought about another person. Okay? Any kind of negative thought about another person. I don't like this person. This person's been bothering me. My mother still calls me every morning. I wish she'd leave me alone and call me every other morning. Stuff like that. Okay? They say that for every thought of feeling bad about somebody, you have about 1,000 desire thoughts. You see what I mean? Like, desire thoughts are much more common. It's much, much, much more common to be distracted by thinking about something you want to do later today, which is a desire thought, than it is to be distracted by thinking about how much you don't like somebody. But they say that the second one destroys your meditation much better. Okay? If you want to ruin your meditation completely, have an anger thought. Like, if you have a desire thought, you can kind of use that, what's the opposite of inertia? Is that inertia? The momentum. Yeah, like if you have a desire thought, you can have momentum and bring it back to some good thing. You see what I mean? Like, if your mind is like bright and cheery and thinking about some song that you heard on the radio, you can kind of lasso it and bring it in. There's still energy to it, right? But when you have a negative thought about somebody and you're down into a negative state of mind, it's almost impossible to come back to your meditation. You might as well almost get up and go to work and yell at them or something. You understand what I mean? Because it destroys your meditation. And if you've ever tried to do a long retreat, and you start to get into a negative thought, it can go on for days. I mean, I've had that, you know, like be jealous of somebody, and it gets more and more intense over about a 2-3 day period, and it just ruins the entire retreat. All the energy leaves the retreat. Okay, so that's a more dangerous one. So those are three kind of forms that Gopa might take. One is like a virtuous object. One is a desire object. Even if it's like, I want to go here after I meditate. And then the third one is like, the worst one is to think something bad about somebody else. Okay. I'm going to talk, let's talk about the antidote first. The English letters are SHE SHIN. Say Shishin.
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 I don't know. You know, it's about 20 different translations used for Shishin. I'll describe it. Then maybe you guys tell me what we should call it, okay? Shishin is a state of mind that watches your mind. It's almost like a spy or something like that, or an alarm. It's like in the diamond business, we have all these exotic alarms in the safes, but this is the one that would detect sound or motion in the room, you know, like a sound alarm. And if someone just makes a slight sound, the thing goes off like crazy. That's Shishin. Shishin is a state of mind that watches your mind from a corner of your mind to see if Chingwa or Gopa has arrived. You know, it's a detector to see if the mind is starting to wander to thinking about music or someone you met at the store or what you're going to do this afternoon at work, or to catch yourself getting lazy, sleepy or tired or something like that. So Shishin is a part of your mind that stays in the corner and watches your mind. So I don't know, it's like a watchful
Vigilance
might be good. Yeah, it's like a what? Big brother. Yeah, in Tibetan they call it a sopa. Sopa means I forget what you call it. It's the guy you send out it's almost like a point man, but he goes out ahead, and if he encounters any enemy, he runs back and says, you know, a scout. And the scout would be pretty good. It's like a scout, huh? Yeah, watchdog. Watchdog is good. It starts barking. Its goal is to make noise. If Chingwa or Gopa arrive in the mind, if you start to buzz out, which is Chingwa, which is very common among Americans, this subtle buzzing out, or if you get if you start thinking about something else, immediately it rings the alarm. Hey, we got a problem here. You know, it pushes the button, you know, we have a problem here. By the way, it doesn't do anything, okay? Its only function is to report a problem, okay? And that's enough to start stopping Chingwa and Gopa. All it does is say, you know, Chingwa and the enemies have arrived. We have to do something. You know, that's all, really, okay? So some kind of watchfulness or vigilance or advanced scout or something like that, okay? Now I want to talk Jetsun Kapa at this point, and that's all the problems we're going to do today. Jetsun Kapa starts talking about the distinction between gross dullness and subtle dullness, okay? And this is very interesting, and I think it's very, very good for Americans or Western people who try to meditate. It's easy to tell when you're having a bad time meditating, you know? It doesn't take Einstein to figure out that you're feeling sleepy or drowsy or you can't concentrate or you're kind of feeling heavy or sleepy. You know, that's easy. Shishin, that kind of shishin doesn't have to be a big, well-developed thing. You know, you try for about 5 minutes to meditate. One day, I totally fell asleep. Fell over, hit the closet, like hard. And then I like, Shishin is like, we have a problem here, you know. You know what I mean? And it really hurt for about a day, my shoulder hurt. And It doesn't take a big sheshin to do that, you know. But there's a subtle dullness. And according to Jetsun Kapa, anyone who tries to meditate seriously might have this problem, will have this problem, and you have to be able to detect it. Your sheshin has to be tuned, calibrated to detect this kind of dullness, which is more difficult. Okay, and so I'm going to just describe the difference between gross dullness and subtle dullness. Okay, to do this, you have to describe three states of mind. Okay, these are three parts of meditation. This is totally different from the five problems and the blah blah blah. Okay, these are three new things. Okay. The English letters here are N-E-C-H-A. Say necha.
Necha.
Necha. Ne means to stay. Cha means condition. Necha means fixation. Okay? The ability of the mind to fix. Fixation. To be fixated on the object. Okay? To be fixated on the other. You can call it fixation. Okay? I don't know if that's what I called it last time I talked. Yeah, you can call it fixation. Okay. If you have good fixation, you're not getting damgak jepa. You're not losing the object. That's basically it. Okay. If you have good fixation, then you're glued to the object. Okay. Your mind is here and the object is here and it's staying there. Okay. Whether fixation, he said, is that where the mind is almost staying on the object automatically? Whether the fixation occurs through intense effort every few seconds, or whether the fixation is cruising on the object because you're so good at it, it doesn't matter. This is just whether or not it's fixated there. Sometimes it's through intense effort, sometimes it's through cruising. And we'll talk about that later. We'll get to that difference later, okay? The English here is S-E-L-C-H-A. S-E-L-C-H-A. Say selcha.
Selcha.
Selcha means clarity, okay? Sel means clear, cha means condition. Selcha means clarity. When I first learned this and the book said clarity and it said you're having a clarity problem, try to increase the clarity, I would try to go to the Buddha's fingers and try to make them clearer. You know, like I would try to get more white here and make the lines more clear and make sure I had all the lines right and that it, all the outline. You know, to me, clarity meant is the image well defined. You see what I mean? And then I was studying it much, much more, and all of the text, when you get deeper into the text, they say, by the way, clarity is not a quality of the object, it's a quality of the subject. Meaning, your mind is more bright, and your mind is more into it. You see what I mean? So it doesn't refer to, when I say clarity from now on, you guys know I'm not talking about how clear is Lama Sopa's face in your meditation. It doesn't mean that. What it means is, are you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know? Are you, like, focusing well? It refers to a good feeling in the mind of not only keeping the object, but you're bright on it. Your mind feels like a little bit high, okay? Like your mind is clear. Your mind is clear and not the object, okay? Get the difference? Okay. The first one is whether or not you lose the object at all. I mean, is the object glued to your mind, you know? And then the second one is, are you, like, sort of into it, okay? That's what clarity means. It doesn't mean that the picture is clear. It means that the mind is, like, when you're reading a good book, okay, like that, okay? So your mind can be, you can have a clear state of mind, and the object is also glued to the front of your mind. You could have selcha without necha. Like if you are in a clear way reviewing what you're going to do this afternoon and you've lost the object, that would be selcha without necha. See? That's clarity and no fixation. You can have fixation with no selcha, which means, you know, you still got Lama Sopa's picture in front of you, but your mind is like totally buzzed out. You know what I mean? Like you didn't lose the object, but your mind is not clear. Okay. And then you can have both, which is what we're supposed to be doing. Okay. Third thing here. These are like three qualities of the mind that will help you decide whether you are having rough dullness or subtle dullness. And we'll get to... First we have to explain these three. And then only then can I explain to you the difference between rough dullness and subtle dullness. Why are we spending so much time on subtle dullness? According to Jeton Kapa and all the great meditation teachers, 90% of the people who learn to sit in the proper position and stay there for an hour are engaged for the whole hour in subtle dullness. You know, and I'm afraid that most Westerners who learn to meditate are there. You know what I mean? I'm afraid of that. I think with I've spent many years just trying to recognize what it is. You know what I mean? And if you someone explains it to you and you learn what it is, you can avoid it. You see what I mean? It's supposed to be a great mistake that you only figure it out like 10 years later and you wasted 10 years, you know. You can sit nice and everything is pretty good and you think you're doing pretty good, but nothing's happening. See, I mean, you're not seeing tantric angels. You're not seeing emptiness directly. You know, you're not reaching other realms. I mean, you can honestly say, I swear to God, I haven't seen anything and I've been meditating for 10 years. Then you have subtle dullness. I mean, you know, it's an indication. Okay, that maybe you have subtle dullness. Or you're not keeping your vows. Okay. Probably both. The English here is N-G-A-R. Say ngar.
Ngar.
Ngar. You can translate it as intensity. What it really means is, in Tibetan, is, I don't know the word in English, but if you take a knife, a steel blade, like a sword or a knife, and you temper it in a fire, before you temper it, it has a certain sharpness, and it stays sharp for a while. But if you keep it in a fire and you treat it at a certain temperature, it gets tempered. And that quality, then it won't get dull for a long, long time. And that quality in the steel is called ngar. Okay? And I don't know what you call it in...
Finely honed.
It's not how sharp it is. It's a basic change in the quality of the steel by... It's the temper of the steel. Temper. It's temper. Okay? And you treat it in a fire at a certain temperature and the whole steel changes to a different kind of steel. And then it holds it holds the sharpness much, much, much longer. It's tempered steel as opposed to ordinary steel. And in meditation it means this, okay? Necha means I'm able to keep the pen in my meditation, you know. Selcha means generally my mind feels pretty aware. You know, I'm not sleepy, I'm not buzzy, I'm not distracted too much, okay? Ngar means I have this intense great feeling about this meditation. You know what I mean? I'm into it. You know, it's like I see people in pujas or in teachings, they're falling asleep at 10 o'clock, you know, and I say, let's go out to a movie, you know? And if it's a good movie, you can stay there till 2 a.m. Nobody's yawning, nobody's like leaning on the chair, and they're all like, wow, you know, or like a good football game or something like that, something that interests you, I don't know what it is, or good music, you know. Somebody says, pound this hammer for 3 hours, you're like, no. Somebody says, play this drum for 3 hours, you're like, yeah, no problem. It's the same thing, right? But there's a ngar. You see, ngar means like some kind of intensity in the sense of personal engagement in the thing, where you love it, and you could do it for hours, you see what I mean? It's like some kind of, it's the thing about your favorite song, or or the movie that you like the best, or the book that you like the best. And it's the difference between reading that and a good book. You see what I mean? The book that really turns you on, or the movie that really your mind sinks into it, as opposed to a regular movie. You see what I mean? It's the one that, and it's all that melatonin or whatever pouring into your brain. I forget what you call it. You know? But while you're into it, it's like this very pleasant experience going on. And it's hard to tear you away from it. You see what I mean? Like it's very hard to tear you away from it. You're like having this, and you can actually like feel something seeping through your mind, you know, like some kind of enjoyment. That's ngara. Okay, when you have ngara towards the object. So you can imagine that it's possible to have necha fixed. The object is still there. Selcha, you're generally pretty clear. Your mind is clear. And then ngara is like, oh man, you know, it's like your favorite movie or your favorite song or your favorite experience, you know, whatever it was, some kind of really thing that just, you know, and people can't tell you, you know, you say, oh my God, you know, 2 hours went by already, you know, it's like that. Then you have ngara, okay. What's that got to do with dullness, okay? Oh, by the way, they compare it to a cup, holding a cup. In the scriptures, they say, being able to hold the cup. You know, if you want to know what necha is, it's just the ability to hold the cup. It's the ability of the fingers to hold the cup. And if you don't drop the cup, you still have necha. This is the meditation object, right? And then this is the mind. The hand is the mind, and this is the meditation object. So if you can not drop the cup, you have fixation. You have necha. The object is still in your mind. Selcha means selcha is like holding it loosely, okay? Like it's pretty good. You're holding it pretty well. It's like nothing's going to spill. It's a little shaky, but nothing's going to spill. So you do have an interest in the object. And your mind is fairly clear and your interest level is pretty clear. And then they say ngara is like that, you know what I mean? Ngara is like you have selcha, you have necha, you have selcha, and then you have this ngar, you know, and ngar is like, you know, in high school it's like in the back seat of the car, and you're like, and we're in a drive-in, and this guy's banging on the window, you know, and the movie ended 2 hours ago, and they want to close the gate, you know, and you're like, my God, it's 4 a.m., you know, what's my mom going to think, you know, it's when you're really deeply into something. It's that, you know, it's like this enjoyment of something. And in the object, you're just, your mind is just sunk into it, and you don't notice the time is passing, okay? So what's the difference between subtle dullness and gross dullness, okay? But I'll spell them for you. And then that's it tonight. Then we're done. The English is J-I-N-G-W-A, Jingwa. And then Rakpa, R-A-K-P-A. And then the second one is Jingwa, J-I-N-G-W-A, Tramo, which is T-R-A-M-O. Got it? Hold the pen hard. Say Chingwa, Rakpa, Chingwa, Rakpa, and then Chingwa, Tamo, Chingwa, Tamo. Chingwa Rakpa means the obvious form of dullness. Okay, Rakpa means obvious. When you crash into the closet, okay? Alright. And then Chingwa Tamo is a subtle, very subtle form of Chingwa. Now I'll tell you the two indicators. Then you'll know if you get into one of them, and if you can figure out when you're getting close to the second one, you have avoided the ultimate enemy of meditation, according to Jetsu Kappa. Okay? Chingwa Rakpa, you know you're having it when you keep losing the object. Okay? Like you know you're getting sleepy, or you had too much to eat, or the room is too warm. When you keep losing the object. that's an indication of Chingwan Rakpa. Okay? Which means you don't even have any necha, right? No fixation. Obviously no clarity. Okay? You have a clarity problem and you have a big time fixation problem. And the object keeps slipping away. Okay? Which means you keep thinking about something else. Or about nothing and you're spacing out. Okay? It's more likely in this case, because it's dullness, that you're starting to think about, you're just getting dull. The state of attention, the quality of your attention is bad. That's obvious. That's gross dullness, obvious dullness. Chingwa tamo, this is very interesting. You have necha. You are fixed on the object. You haven't lost the object. You still have Lama Sopa's image in front of your mind. And you're still fixed on it. Okay? You have fixation. And what's interesting is you also have selcha. That was surprising to me, but if you experiment with it, you'll find out that that's true. You still have fairly good attention span. Okay? The quality of your attention on the object is still pretty good. Okay? If someone asked you, did you lose the object, you could say honestly, no. If someone said, is your mind still pretty clear? You say, yes, it is. But then if they asked you, do you have lar? Lar. Okay. Teaching the alphabet, Tibetan alphabet to people is really fun, because when you get to the fourth letter, they're like, okay, this is nga, you know, nga. You know, you don't have nga, which means you're not turned on by the object. You see what I mean? And it's the difference between a good book and a great book. It's the difference between a regular song on the radio and an intense experience of listening to State of Emergency or something, you know. Few people. Okay. It's like being around somebody you like and being around someone you're madly in love with or something like that. The physical experience is something like that. You see the difference between those experiences. See, in each case, you're aware that there's a song, you're aware that they're playing a movie, you're kind of reading that book, you know, you're skipping a few sentences here and there. But if somebody said, are you still reading the book? You say, yeah. And they'd say, can you tell me what it said the last five pages? You say, yeah, I can tell you. But it wasn't like this earth-shaking, it wasn't like I was so into the book that I didn't notice the passage of time. Okay? That's subtle dullness. And you have to watch out that you don't spend your precious lifetime hours in meditation having that. Reading a lousy book, watching a movie you don't really like, you know, listening to a station that's not so bad that you should turn it off, but it's not also inspiring you. You see what I mean? It's the difference between, that's ngar. And the experience in meditation should be like intense. And it should be some kind of beautiful experience going on that you have ngar. Okay? Yeah.
So you can carry these out off the cushion.
Oh, yeah. The whole point of meditation, which we're going to talk about, there's something that's not in that course. I did that course in 93 or something, I forget. But after that, we started, there's a very beautiful thing by Nagarjuna, Arya Nagarjuna, about how to take this into your daily life. And we're going to do that. We'll do that before, yeah. Did you have one? That's a really good question. You know, she said, so are you supposed to change the object, like change the channel or find a new friend or you know, go to the sneak out of that movie and go to the one next door, you know, and see if it's better. You know what I mean? Is that the object? I don't think so. I think it's ultimately, they say, go back to the... I mean, to tell you the truth, the fix for subtle dullness is... like to, and this is a very difficult thing. They talk about going into a state of brightness. Okay? Like going into a state of brightness. And they compare it to the sky, or they compare it to a light, or something like that. But it would involve going back to depa and considering the benefits of what you're doing again. You see what I mean? It's like getting excited about what you're doing again. And that's the main thing. But again, you have to have all these other things going on, meaning eating well, sleeping well, taking care of your body, And most importantly, what? Keeping your vows. And I don't mean not lying, not killing, not stealing like that. I don't mean just that. I mean keeping your bodhisattva vows, keeping your tantric vows, and checking them every hour. Every hour or two, you have this book, and you stop, and you open it up, and you look at it, and you say, you know, did I have any slight thoughts of jealousy in the last 2 hours? And if you do that for 2 or 3 years, every 2 hours, gnar will come to you like all the time. You know, you'll have gnar about everything. Ultimately, gnar is another karma, right? Ultimately, your meditation is another empty object. Your mind is another object that has emptiness. Whether or not you're going to have gnar or never going to have gnar, it really doesn't depend on so much on your personal efforts at that moment. It depends on your whole lifestyle. You know, are you a good Buddhist? Are you being a compassionate Buddhist, you see? And if you're having trouble getting gnar, you know, go back to your bodhisattva vows. I mean, people come to me and say, my meditation is lousy. I say, show me your book. Oh, gee, you know, I don't think, you know, you don't want to see my book. I say, is it really that bad? All this stuff in there, is that bad? They say, not really, it's just mostly blank, you know? You see what I mean? You know, I can joke, it's fun to joke about it, but it's really a direct connection between are you checking your vows, which means are you checking your lifestyle on a hour to hour, every 2 hours, stop, open the book, write it. You've seen me up here, it takes 15 seconds, 30 seconds, something like that. And then all this gnar starts coming into your meditation and in everything else too. Your personal relationships, the music you hear, how your body feels, how foods taste, how things smell, whether or not the wind is blowing right, how the ocean smells, how the waves are. Everything becomes more gnar. Everything becomes more intense. You know, you read E.E. Cummings poems or you listen to Bjork music and you're like, how can this person feel these things? You know, I don't get to feel things like that. They have these intense feelings of everything. She gets intense about waking up and going over the cliff and throwing things off. And nothing like that's happening to me. You know, I get intense about it once a month, you know. And these people seem to be intense all the time. What's the difference? It's really that they were very virtuous in their past. You know what I mean? It's that they were doing very compassionate things for other people, taking care of other people, keeping their... The most hard thing in America is your speech, you know. Like, not to talk about other people, not to waste your talk about somebody, something. Somebody's doing this, somebody's doing that. Blabbing, you know. It ruins the gnar of your meditation. You know, it leaks out as you blab about other people that you don't have any business blabbing about and who God knows who they are. You know what I mean? And then all the gnar is leaking out all day long, and then you get into meditation and you don't know why you're having subtle dullness instead of this intense experience. And that's the difference. I've noticed that as you get older, you lose the gnar in your everyday life. You know what I mean? Experiences are much more intense at 20 than at 40, generally speaking. But if you're meditating well, and if you're keeping your vows well, the reverse happens. And it's very, it like sends thrills up your spine, you know, that the taste that you used to taste when you were 15 or something, feelings that you used to feel when you were 15, the experience of colors or sounds or music or everything, your own body starts to reverse. And you start to remember how it used to feel and how it used to taste and things like that. And this is all the gnar in your daily experiences is coming back because your karma is getting sweeter and sweeter. And so the energy is starting to flow back into you. It's very, very noticeable and it's the point of Buddhism. If you keep that up intensely over several years, you start to have tantric experiences. And that's the tantra works, tantra feeds off of that principle, that if you are keeping your vows sweetly, you know, if you're meditating well, if all that gnar is coming back to you, then actually your body starts to change and your mind starts to change. And the hope of getting enlightened in one lifetime before you die in this life is based on that. It's based on that coming back to you. So that's very cool. In fact, this weekend at Vajrapani, we'll talk about the last three classes are a text that Pabongkor Rinpoche wrote about how that process works And I want that to be the meditation object. You see what I mean? So the first, seven classes are about how to meditate. The last three classes are, to me, the most important thing to meditate about, which is how to get that process working in Tantra and how to get it working, that gnar coming back to you and your life starts to reverse itself. And that book was not spread in Tibet. It was kept secret. It is not in Pabongka Rinpoche's collected works. And it was given to us by Pabongka Rinpoche, the number three, okay? Like, he gave me a copy. And it's really beautiful. So we'll be doing that at Vajrapani. I will not get into the final part, which is Tantra, but I'll take you right up to the edge of it, okay? And it's very sweet because it's designed to do that. It's designed for that. So he used to teach it before he gave initiations. He made students go through that like the day before they got initiation. So I thought you'd like to have, the oral tradition on that. It'd be cool. Because that's something you can meditate about. You know, to get a big gun and then not to have any elephant to shoot is is no fun, you know. But if you got this really powerful thing to shoot at, you know, it's great, you know. Then you can do something with it. Okay, we'll do some prayers. We'll stop.
Toko nam na shi la cha pa la.